All right, as I've been discovering this week, I say that at the beginning of every show I host. So welcome to another episode of the Hollow Knight Network's Horrorcast. Yes, Dave the Clone has hijacked Liz's show just to do a little, you know, every once in a while you have one of these things that happens and you're like, holy shit, this is an episode right here. So I have run into some new friends who not only are awesome horror hounds like ourselves, but happen to just be, so happen to be psychologists. So we could talk about this shit on a whole new level. So I'm going to welcome into the spotlight of our horror cast my new friends Todd and Erica over from myhorrificlife.com and the podcast of the same name. Welcome to Horrorcast, guys.
Hey, thank you.
It's been a long time coming, I feel like, just from the chat we were having before we got started here. It's like, oh yeah, these are some kindred spirits that have all been lurking out in the dark that have needed a reason to come in together and talk about stuff. So thanks for coming and hanging out over at the Hollow Knight Network. I love the fact that we can talk about like the real sort of mechanics and the things that make this whole sort of phenomenon of why people enjoy horror, why we become fans of horror, why that works on maybe a level a lot of us don't realize on the surface all the time. So I hope you guys are cool breaking out some of those tools as we dip into some new areas, I think, for maybe definitely for our audience. Everyone's probably listening to this going, holy shit, when Dave takes over, it gets fucking crazy. Like, what the hell? What are we going to talk about, Dave? What are you about to say? Well, one of the things I've been chatting about on Facebook with Erica a lot is the fact that horror as a genre, as a phenomenon, may have taken a little bit of a shift once we entered the post 9/11 world. So why don't you guys kind of tell me a little bit about how, you know, what you see were the sort of signifiers of that shift and what that shift has been like and how it's affected how you guys consume and enjoy your horror.
From what I've seen, like we discussed before, Dave, it's kind of a cyclical thing where in times of political and social unrest or times of war, horror becomes more popular or more mainstream. I think people just need that catharsis that you can't get from milder forms of entertainment. And
well, they have to have some kind of safe way to experience fear.
Yes.
You know, one thing about horror in general is that it is a way of being thrilled, excited, and scared, but ultimately you know that it's not real.
Mm-hmm.
And unlike someone breaking into your home where it's very real and terrifying in a first-person way, horror lets us actually kind of deflect those emotions a little bit and still be excited by the thrill of it, but not actually have personal danger involved.
And now has that sort of, I mean, I guess if you think if we're going to talk about it in those terms, the sort of need for the kind of escape is going to be different in a world that's been changed by something like a 9/11. What do you see, like, what have been some of the things that I guess that maybe you've either liked or disliked that you've seen that have been sort of popping to the surface in the world of horror that you think might be the sort of direct responses to things like a 9/11 and maybe even just the atmosphere that has followed of terrorism and sort of global threats everywhere kind of thing?
This is where Todd and I have different opinions as to whether we like certain things or not.
Fuck yes. I love controversy.
I love post 9/11 horror films, and the trend that I really liked that Todd does not like, and he'll tell you his reasons for not liking it, is what's termed torture porn, which I think is a horrible label. But I prefer to call them torture films because they are not pornographic. But films like Hostel and Saw, I feel like those really came to the forefront after 9/11. Maybe they aren't quite as popular now, but they still have a following.
Right.
I mean, there were concerns about, foreigners who wish us ill, which you see in the Hostel films. And, obviously like the whole, torture was in the news a lot too, because we were torturing suspected terrorists. And then there's the debate of, is that ethical or not?
Right.
And, Of course, you know, our current president,
don't get Erica going on that or me.
We actually have, just to throw it out there for if you guys ever want to come back and visit us at the Hall and I Network again, we have a show called 45 Reasons Why, which is okay. Total takeoff of the Netflix show. And of course the 45. So, I have a feeling that'll be a nice home away from home for you guys. If you want to come back and hang out again.
It's funny, actually, Erica and I, it's not that we have competing theories that are antithetical to each other. I'm not a guy that prefers the gory torture kind of films.
Or extensive rape scenes. Yeah, that
kind of stuff. But I think one of the things that I've noticed, and I know that George Romero, you know, started the whole zombie thing in the late 60s, so I know it's not new, but one of the things that I've noticed is like with the you know, all the zombie movies and Walking Dead, something about those seem to really take precedence over the last 10 to 15 years. And if you really think about zombies, they're people next door that become something that you can no longer trust and that you fear. And so one of the things that I've noticed, and I'm not the only one that has noticed this, is that you've seen kind of the popularity of zombie stuff go up since terrorism, because terrorists are basically people that you don't know if you can trust that in your midst, you know, versus, you know, vampires or folks that are completely separate from us or not around all the time. So, I mean, that's kind of, it's not really a competing theory. I think Erica's is very, makes complete sense.
And that can overlap with some of the torture films, like especially Hostel 2. Mm-hmm. Bad guys in that were just seemingly very average, upper middle class Americans, like so much the guy next door. And they have these sadistic fantasies that they want to enact on other human beings.
Right.
But you wouldn't know it from looking at it because they seem so safe and benign.
Well, right. The one guy is kind of presenting himself to be most of the movie. Yeah. He's kind of the one who doesn't have, he's not 100% across the line yet. But what's interesting too, I mean, to kind of build on that a little bit, if you guys don't mind, is if we look at things as a progression from there, you know, maybe that's sort of leading to where the sort of monster is now, the thing that's running the country. Because the one friend of the two, I guess we're talking about the American villains, because I think the other thing that the second one showed too was the global network aspect of the elite hunting group. And so the guy who is like fully committed but then starts to kind of chicken out partway through, he wants to know be that more much more powerful in the boardroom. He made it way much more about this corporate, like, can you imagine how anyone would be able to negotiate against you when in the back of your mind you know you fucking killed somebody? And it's like, dude, of all the fucking reasons to want to kill somebody, I mean, like, I would hope that you could at least bring it to a level of you watched your family get murdered and now you can't even fucking, like, come or have sex unless you've had, like, murder earlier in the day. You know, I will settle for that as much more of like a justifiable reason for this level of crazy, other than I want to be able to close bigger deals when I'm fucking downtown. Like, dude, fuck you.
Commentary about capitalism too, in a way.
You know, the thing is, I think we're really in the middle of a really cool evolution in horror, integrating technology in a meaningful way, and the impersonal nature of social media. One of Erica, my favorite shows is Black Mirror.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You know, and so it's so, you know, I don't think we're moving away from terrorism, but I think this phase of, you know, getting away from Terminator style machines taking over the world to the real dangers of technology and, you know, corporate influence. You're seeing a lot of smart stuff come out about that.
God. I mean, the way that Ridley Scott shifted his whole Alien franchise to make the story much more about this sort of half capitalist, half selfish, elitist, half more dangers of artificial intelligence and robots. Meanwhile, that series started out being about monsters from space. You know what I mean? Yes. And now it's like, hey, we made the thing that created that. So this could be one of those, the Russian doll situations of who, made what, made God, made us. Right. It's an interesting take on that. A lot of people are not happy with this twist. I think it's kind of cool.
I love it too. And I tell you, a movie I love that some people don't is Blade Runner 2049.
I love that
just
too.
Just amazing and such a great commentary on, you know, the soullessness of, you know, out of control technology and, you know, the creation of slaves versus masters and
soulless corporations.
That's the main thing, is soulless corporations. So there just is amazingly good stuff, and I'm a fan of both of the Prometheus and the more recent Alien movie too.
Covenant. I liked a little bit better than Prometheus, but it's making me appreciate Prometheus more.
I'm so angry there wasn't a middle movie about how the woman gets killed on the spaceship, because it's just like, by the way, the whole person that you were rooting for to live the whole first movie is dead and killed by the bad androids. So
they showed some quick flashes in the movie. On the Blu-ray there is a deleted scene that basically shows a lot more of what he did to her.
Now I'll have to buy that.
Well, yes, I have the Blade Runner DVD, but
I do too.
I have not seen Blade Runner 2049 yet, and I really am dying to see it because I love the original Blade Runner. I'm a big Ridley Scott fan.
You will love it. I was a little worried myself because it's like, oh, is this going to ruin the original Blade Runner? And I have that. That 5-disc collection of the different versions.
Yeah, of course. Yep. It's like, I always kind of just watch the directors, but I mean, Jesus, there are 5 versions. I mean, like, it's nice that they put them all there.
It's so amazing how horror and sci-fi both reflect the fears and values of the time. So I know we all laugh at them now, but the rubber monster movies of the 50s and 60s, but that was about communism. That was about some evil entity from outside our country coming in and taking over. The best example of that was Invasions of the Body Snatchers. Yep. And I know there was the 50s version. I love the Donald Sutherland version much more from the 70s, and it still had the whole communist, but the whole infiltration part was fantastic.
They look like us, but they're not us. And yeah. They all have a hive mind because they're communists.
Was that the Leonard Nimoy also?
Leonard Nimoy, I'm trying to remember.
There was definitely one that he was in.
Yes, I think he was in one of those.
I know there was a 1990s remake of it as well, but I am not either.
That was not good. I remember that one.
I have not seen it, or I blotted it from my memory. It was so bad. I don't know which it was.
It just was not that good.
Well, then there was like the Heinlein one, what's it called? Puppet Master that they did that was sort of like very obviously. It wasn't quite Body Snatchers because it was parasite aliens, but they were hive-minded as well. But it had a little bit like the way the thing opened up before it like attached to you looked also like the ovum from an alien film. So it was like kind of...
Oh, yeah.
But it was based on a Robert Heinlein novel, so it's sort of like, how can we really say it was pulling from these other things? But visually, I mean, clearly whoever designed the alien in that thing had seen Alien. You know what I mean? You're like, okay, dude, I know where the fuck you got that from.
Well, I think, but the bottom line is, horror movies allow us to experience thrills without really being in danger.
And I think it's... Oh, I'm sorry. Didn't mean to step on.
Oh, I was just thinking, like, another shift that I noticed post 9/11 is that horror films became a lot grittier and more realistic and more explicit, especially compared to things that came out in the late 90s. Not that I hate those films, but those films were kind of campy and funny, like Wishmaster films.
I love Wishmaster, which
I enjoy. Different tone to them than post 9/11 films.
Well, I mean, you also don't see a lot of experiment. I mean, like, I remember Lord of Illusions being a movie that stood out in the 90s that was like, well, this one's different. This one, Clive Barker.
I love Lord of Illusions. Is that one, the Scott Bakula?
Yeah. I met him in 2012. I met him at Wizard World in Chicago. And all I could say, because I was the guy holding the camera for a friend of mine to do that interview, because I had done the Dean Stockwell interview before that. And when we all got to kind of shake his hand at the end and walk by, I just walked up. I was like, dude, fucking Lord of Illusions was awesome. awesome. And he's like, yeah, that was a really cool movie, right? And I'm like, yeah, dude, that was great. And then I just got to walk away, and that was my moment with Scott Bakula.
Nice.
But fucking, you know, Lord of Illusions was a very different kind of movie. It was like half a film noir detective film. It was kind of a little bit like Angel Heart, you know, in a lot of ways, I guess, in that respect. But, you know, since post 9/11, it's not really, it doesn't seem like the horror palette is there for that kind of a horror movie anymore. And I guess my signifier when this all like sparked for me when we were talking about it on Facebook before we got on the recording was when they did that Dawn of the Dead remake, the Zack Snyder film. And right, not very shortly after that was 28 Days Later, Danny Boyle's zombie film. This was the sudden dawn of fast-moving zombies. This was like the shift that was kind of like, because to me, I always thought the zombies were like this, unescapable, even if they're moving slow, they're eventually going to surround you, and it's the inescapable approach of death. Like, no matter what, at some point you can't outrun it. You're going to run into that blind alley and then turn around and there's a million of them. But they always were shambling and very slow, so it was sort of like you could get lulled into a false sense of security if you thought you were far enough away. All of a sudden, post 9/11, we've got these things that they see you, they come after you. It becomes like Resident Evil video game over here, you know? I guess Resident Evil 2, another zombie series that had fast-moving zombies. So to me, that was kind of when I started to say, oh shit, things are going to start being different now, like across the board.
Yep.
So refresh my memory of when did the first Resident Evil film come out? Do you remember offhand?
It was definitely after the Dawn of the Dead remake. I'm going to consult the Google machine right now.
I noticed an
I'm sorry. That was actually in 2001, maybe? Because I was in college when that came out.
This is like way off topic and probably a little inappropriate to point out, but have you noticed that in each film there is a brief glimpse of the heroine's vagina? Yes, like
Erica, how the hell?
So this has nothing to do with psychology or post
9/11. Is this it's Resident Evil, that Umbrella Corporation?
Yes.
It
was.
What's the name of the
Jovovich?
Milo Jovovich.
Yeah, in every single movie there is a glimpse.
That is urban legend.
It's not.
I remember very vividly seeing her vagina in the first movie for sure.
I thought it was an accident that they
the paper
had flipped up or something, and I thought it was an accident. But then it happened in all the other movies. It's like they're doing this on purpose.
I feel like I missed out.
I imagine she also could be stipulating this because she's very, very much known to be an exhibitionist. Like she and a bit of an attention whore. Not that you can't be being a fucking Hollywood star. The first Resident Evil was in 2002, so it was very close at post 9/11.
It's just a split second.
That's amazing because to me, I'm sure, I don't know what this says about me, but whenever Resident Evil gets brought up, I often think, I'm like, oh yeah, you see your twat in that movie. Like, I'm like, okay, that's the first thing she brought up. By the way, in everyone, you can see the heroine's vagina. I'm like, okay, this is going to go either very hardcore feminist on me all of a sudden, which, hey, by all means, have at it. This floor is yours if you'd like.
Well, it's already got a kick-ass protagonist, so that's great.
I don't see anything specifically feminist in the fact that she flashes the camera briefly, but it was just
I meant more being offended by it because of some kind of
I'm not for or against it really.
You can't be a horror fan and be easily offended.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you're liking the wrong movies to do that, but. You know, it's so interesting because one of the things that made me want to do a podcast with Erica about horror movies is that I always felt a little bit like an outcast as a psychologist who liked horror movies because, you know, the kind of common wisdom out there is that they're bad for you, they're lowbrow,
you'll commit murder if you watch enough of them.
You know, well, I don't know about that.
Even amongst the professional psychology community, because that's a hefty weight to put on the power of films. Like, oh yeah, by the way, I know you have a fucking PhD, but dude, your mind is gonna be weak as fuck against that shit. You're gonna go and make a Freddy glove, motherfucker. And I know what's happening now. I'm gonna have to be called by the cops, and if I don't say we had this conversation mission, I'm an accomplice. So I'm just letting you know, if this shit goes off the deep, I'm fucking flipping on you as fast as I fucking can, dude. I am not going down for your fucking PhD mind that can't handle a movie. To me, that's what they say in that little criticism. They give me that whole fucking rant right there. And I'm like, I find that offensive, but fuck
it. It's funny, though. I mean, it's not like anyone says that overtly.
They don't seem to anymore. But no, in the 90s, no. I was told by my church Bible study that I went to as a teenager that people like me were responsible for Columbine.
Wow. Oh, yeah. Like, well, that's not psychologists, Erica.
They were not psychologists, but it was some jackass. I don't remember who he was. But I wore black all the time, and I watched horror movies. That was my thing. But it's like that was not appreciated by those people. So,
oh, I mean, you're lucky you weren't down in where the hell was that? Where there's the West Memphis Three. Holy shit! I mean, 20 years these fucking guys were their entire young adult lives, like, didn't even get out of high school. And fully from the fact of all these corrupt practices. And now the thing is, these are kind of the crazy ass real life stories that you really would only expect to be seeing in movies, like especially in horror movies. Right. And you're like, holy shit, this happened. Like, oh man, that's nuts. That's nuts.
It's a horrible, horrible cliche, but the truth is that truth is truly stranger than fiction. And, you know, if some of these things you made them in the movies, people wouldn't believe them, you know, initially if they didn't really happen. But yeah, no, I want to make it clear that it's not like I've been somehow, you know, looked down upon by my fellow psychologists or chastised or anything. It's just one of those things where it's like, well, you know, why do you like that?
We're going to run you horror-lacking psychologists out of town, I tell you. You got the pitchforks and the torches ready to go, man. I don't know, dude. I mean, that would be a little much, but at the same time, the things that are happening now in real life that are almost like stuff that should be happening only in movies. You never know. You never know what people are going to get all out bent out of shape about these days.
See, I like, and I think one of the differences between Eric and I, and you please comment on this, but I think I really look at horror movies for me as escapism. So I look for less realistic, and you look for something that reflects possible real life. That's why you like possibly kind of the torture or the more gory kind of thing.
I do like more supernatural films too. Like I Insidious series, for instance.
That's great.
I think that might be my favorite horror series right now of all time.
I do like the more like gritty, sadistic films too. Maybe I think those films were one of my main sort of coping, and it's not technically a coping mechanism, but it was like something I used to cope with stuff that I saw at my job. When I used to work for, I think it was 12 years I worked for the local rape crisis center that also served domestic violence victims. And I would get called to go into the hospital and meet victims and either for sexual assault or domestic violence cases, which like no two cases are alike. And some of them were really bizarre and gruesome that can't go into details because of confidentiality.
I'm sure there's even people out there going like, how far are they going to go? I don't know if I want to hear any more of this.
I'm not going to be overly explicit, but I did, for some reason, I had the weird luck of the draw of getting the sexually sadistic cases. And I would go into like the weekly case meeting and explain, you know, the cases I had that week. And people were looking at me like, you know, what the hell?
This is an episode of American Horror Story you've got going on over here.
Did watching horror movies help you kind of cope in a way?
It did.
The way of
it completely
kind of,
did. Yeah. It's
that kept it as a distance.
It did. I think that's why I lasted for over 10 years, whereas a lot of people at that agency quit within a few months because they saw things that they didn't want to acknowledge actually happened in real life. And I think because I was obsessively watching so many horror films, including the more torture-based ones, and I also love the movie I Spit on Your Grave.
Oh my! I was going to ask about that. I was going to say, what about that's as real as it gets. I mean, you see that guy, you see that gush of blood when she's got that knife in the tub, and you're like, I don't know if I could go any further. Like, holy shit!
slightly off topic, I consider the actress from the original version of that a pretty good friend, Camille Keaton, who played Jennifer. So yeah,
She's awesome. She's been on our podcast, and she was such a wonderful.
That's awesome! Congratulations.
The podcast My Horrific Life, which you can get on iTunes or myhorrificwife.com, but all one word.
Well done.
Thank you. And it's so funny because, in contrast to Erica, you know, I grew up and I saw the late Saturday night creature feature kind of shows in the 70s. Mm-hmm. This was kind of the end of that. So I'm much more of kind of a hokey Universal Monsters, non-reality kind of fan, not so much of the kind of really intense. I mean, I watched the Friday the 13th and the Halloween movies in the 80s when they came out when I was in high school. So, mm-hmm. you know, that was cool, but I always kind of like the kind of 70s because we saw, and I don't know if you ever watched one of these, it was Dr. Sanguinary in Omaha. He was like the late night scary monster host. And it was always these cheesy things from the 50s and 60s. And I just love that so much, and still we'll watch these just ridiculously stupid, you know, people in rubber suits and, you know, ridiculous special effects, but it's so much fun.
Well, now there's this whole, you know, side to, I guess it gets lumped into the sort of tinfoil hat conspiracy theory world, but the other side of the coin of the sort of you know, hidden messages about it being all about communism at that time was also a heavy dose of what they call the dissemination of misinformation. And it was the whole thing to be able to play off things like the Roswell crash. It's like, well, you know, we've already established things like flying saucers and little green men from Mars. So now they become these things that are strictly from the make-believe world of movies. So when people hear, oh, there was a crash over on the mountain, and one person who saw it goes, yeah, they were fucking aliens, dudes. I saw the shit go down, and aliens came out. The rest of the town could be like, okay, that guy says he saw shit from the movies. You know what I mean? How ridiculous is that?
Right.
So it's like it plays into the idea of the whole entertainment, you know, machine being basically a big brainwashing device to kind of control how we think and feel about certain topics and ideas. And horror seems to be the one that was maybe the most subversively used that we didn't really realize until now, because now it's becoming, I think, in a lot of ways much more artistic than it's ever been before. Now, do you think, and I guess, and maybe this question is coming to mind because you guys have psychology backgrounds, do you think part of even, you know, the reason that maybe your colleagues would have been like, oh, you know, especially Erica, if you said people made comments to you like, oh, that's going to make you crazy, you can't watch that. does that not sort of indicate, even for all of us, that part of the reason movies are such a special thing is because even though we know it's all make-believe, there's just like this little part of our mind that kind of is going, I hope this is real, and I kind of hope this is real so much that I'm going to slightly believe that it's real. Otherwise, why would you be even scared in your house watching a horror movie in the dark? You know what I mean? But I definitely know for a fact, after I watched Insidious, in my last apartment, I could never walk around without at least one light on somewhere, because I'm like, I know the fucking demon doesn't like light, so we're leaving that shit on.
I have to admit, I had that reaction to Session 9 when I first saw it.
Oh my god, that movie's crazy.
That movie, like, warped me so badly, and it was, looking back, it doesn't, you know, seem quite as terrifying, but it really got to me when I saw it, and I was, like, kind of weirded out being home alone, you know, after seeing that for a while.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because two of my favorite movies are The Exorcist and Rosemary's Baby. Mm. And so, especially some of those movies that involve spiritual elements. And I don't know if this is what you're getting at with the question, but I think there's a tiny bit of that that is oddly comforting because it reminds you that there may be larger spiritual forces at work that you want to believe exists. Mm-hmm. And so even though it scares the pee out of you to think that, you know, a demon is going to possess a girl or the devil is going to impregnate a woman in a New York condo, It still is a reminder that there is an afterlife and that there are larger spiritual forces and that you're not just here and then you die.
If you believe that. I think if you bring that belief system to this, definitely, for sure. But maybe what about for people who are riding the fence a little bit? You know what I mean? It might be easy to not be so scared if you're like, well, I don't believe in that anyway, so demons are bullshit, you know?
Although, I mean, I've met several people who identify as atheists, or they grew up in very, how would you say, more liberal religious homes that don't believe in Satan. And those people are still scared by The Exorcist and Insidious and movies like that, which is interesting because they don't have any kind of upbringing basis for believing it anyway, but there's just something, maybe it's the cultural currency.
Right.
Yeah.
Because of our cultural heritage of, you know, Judeo-Christian beliefs, that even people who were not raised believing those things still feel like those movies hit a nerve for them.
Right. And it still reminds you that there's you don't even have to fully believe in them for it to raise the question of it, of, you know, other dimensions or other spiritual happening. And so it raises the question, then it scares the pee out of you by, you know, answering it, that you could be possessed by it. So,
well, I mean, I think that there's even room for people to not I think there are people who actually do believe in the same concept and think of it in a totally different way. Like, there are the people who will argue, and even my philosophy professor from college was probably one of them, that the idea that we could all actually be in the Matrix and there's no way any of us would be able to find out. There's actually this long-standing philosophical argument, which I think at the time in college he was saying was called the brain in the vat. There is no way that you can prove you're not just a brain in a vat with all these like electrodes plugged into it, telling it what it's seeing and feeling and sensing and experiencing. There was this whole mind-blowing first lecture he did about how, like, you actually don't know what the world around you is really like. Everything that you are interpreting is all through this, like, extrasensory stuff. Like, you know, your eye interprets light bouncing off of an object, and until your eye takes in that light wave and it takes in the information and transmits the information along your optic nerve back to your brain, which then interprets the signal from your optic nerve and then creates a picture, you don't know what color things really are. There's just something in the object that tells your brain blue. So for me, experiencing blue could be something totally different from you guys experiencing blue. And you can extrapolate this whole thing to being like, yeah, there could be a computer telling us all what blue is, and it could be telling us all slightly different things we would never know. So, you know, that is already assigning the idea that there's something bigger than us that built this whole thing that we exist in called reality. And we really kind of all spend a lot of time arguing about stuff we really can't necessarily 100% prove to each other. So why kill each other over it, kind of thing, you know?
And if they had the whole class smoke pot, that would be an even more amazing discussion.
Well, you know, this guy definitely.
I've been told, of course, I haven't ever done it, but I've been told. Wink, wink.
Yeah, I hear all the time about all of its, you know, side effects or benefits that are having it be legalized in states here and there across the country. You never know. But I know this guy definitely, you could tell he was a little road worn. Like, I'm sure there was plenty of there was some acid done in his day that left its mark, like, on his face. You know, you're like, holy shit, Professor Anderson, what the hell are we about to learn from you? I'm going to read some Bertrand Russell.
Your point is well taken. It's fascinating because I think there's also, and this is something that both sci-fi and horror have in common, that we all want to be part of something that's a little bigger than our current reality. Mm. You know, we'd like to think that there's something more going on, whether you're spiritually minded or not, you know, whether we are, you know, part of millions of different civilizations in, you know, the universe, which, you know, that sci-fi kind of taps into that, or whether there's other realms of existence or realms of spiritual beings, which horror sometimes taps into. I think that's part of the thrill of both those genres, is it kind of takes us out of the mundane, kind of suggests that, hey, we could be some, you know, sometimes that's terrifying because it may be other realities that are, you know, Lovecraft, it might be Cthulhu out to get us, but still.
I mean, could you imagine waking up and that is what is around you? You're just like, oh, fuck. Like, I'm in the mist right now.
One of my favorite Lovecraftian type movies is From Beyond.
Oh, yeah.
You know, of that, you know, where they really make that tangible and just such a Jeffrey Combs, one of our favorite actors, and you know, is so over the top in that, and Reanimator as well. But
oh yeah, wow, yeah. I even argue too that I think the I guess it was the early 2000s now, whatever year that Thomas Jane's starring vehicle of Stephen King's The Mist came out, the creatures. That when they're at the end, when he sees those giant fucking things walking over them, I'm like, whoa. And anytime the tentacles become a big thing, I'm like, oh, yeah. I know what you grew up reading. I know what's going on here.
Well, and, you know, Stranger Things borrowed from that so much.
Well, especially the recent season. Holy shit.
I still haven't seen the new season.
But, you know, it's like The Mist, a lot of people hate that because it's such a sad ending, yeah. You know, downer of an ending. It is my favorite Stephen King movie. And
it's
and,
actually been the best one, I think, in a long time.
I think so too.
And you know what was amazing? That the very opening when he's painting a picture of the gunslinger and you're like, oh, is there a gunslinger movie in the works? And then now what we've gotten recently has been told. I watched it just to watch. I bought it as a completist. I read the books. I needed to fucking see.
Dark Tower.
Oh, God, dude. The Dark Tower movie was horrible.
I didn't mind the movie that much. I mean, it was a very Cliff's Notes version of the book. So it's if you wanted something that covers the depth and scope of the books. Obviously, the recent film adaptation does not do it. Stephen King himself actually liked it.
That's actually the best description I've ever heard of it, the Cliff's Notes version of the book. That's kind of exactly spot on. It's heartbreaking, actually. I mean, it was actually supposed to be a sequel to the last book, so it wasn't supposed to actually be an adaptation. They actually said that anyone who's read all the books would probably get a little bit more out of it because there are certain phrases and references that are said that you're like, I know what that means, and no one else who hasn't seen this or read this would, but it was just that it had so much potential to be this huge. They were going to do it like a almost on the level of the Peter Jackson Lord of the Rings films. Right. And I don't think it's going to have that now because it had such a poor showing at the box office. And that's just heartbreaking.
That's okay.
I don't know. Well, I was kind of thinking like if like a series that I think is actually really mediocre, like the Twilight series, can have like a film adaptation per book in the series. I wish the Dark Tower could have had that same treatment.
Yeah, but there are some of those books that could be done or would need to be done as two movies. You know, there's just so much story to those. It's pretty overwhelming. You know, all the sort of rumors about when it was in production hell that they were considering doing like a movie and then a season of a TV show on like Showtime or HBO and then another movie and then another season. So it was going to be this like multi-formatted presentation of this huge thing.
Wow.
I know, right? Well, now we're gonna get the Blumhouse shared universe. I don't know if you guys have heard about that, but they're gonna be doing a crossing between Sinister and Insidious.
In my mind,
I think that means they could also bring in shit from like The Purge as well. They could have it all existing in a big shared universe.
The Sinister movies have snuff films, so that could be the tie-in to the Purge series. So
yeah.
I do have a thing about snuff films, which Todd also does not relate to.
Are we saying a thing for like enjoying them? Or
not real snuff films. Let's make that clear.
I enjoy the fake ones sometimes if the special effects are outstanding, which is really the key thing to making those movies work, is you have to believe or wonder, is like, are they really killing someone? I also like the movies that have mythology around them, where the filmmakers were so secretive that the films were mistaken for real snuff films for years, like the original Guinea Pig films made in Japan were under criminal investigation for a decade.
And oh, yeah, they were never real.
They never were real. No, but no. Charlie Sheen got a copy of one of them from a porn shop and freaked out because he thought it was a real snuff film. And
winning.
That's sort of a legendary story. But
yeah, that's good urban legend kind of stuff. I'll tell you the worst travesty for a rightfully aborted effort to boot a cinematic series is that horrible, horrible Universal Monsters.
Oh wow.
The movie that we reviewed, The Mummy with Tom Cruise, which was a travesty.
I almost want to see it for like the mostly naked chick, but I hear it's not even worth it for that.
That part's okay, but I mean, the issue is it is not a horror movie. It is a stupid action movie, Fast and Furious.
It's almost like a superhero
movie. It's a superhero movie. They try to act like it's a horror movie. Yeah. So yeah, it was like, and it's like, I was so excited about the potential for a Dark Universe kind of Universal Monster reboot. And then of course that's completely scrapped now, rightfully, because if they were just going to make, you know, action superhero movies with a thinly veiled, you know, monster protagonist, then forget it.
Yeah.
We're both such big fans of Boris Karloff in the original Mummy. Yes. It's really hard to compete with that anyway, but this was so off kilter with the whole tone of it. The Mummy remake, I mean.
Well, it's almost hard to take a movie like that seriously when Tom Cruise is the lead. You're like, Wait, what? Like Mission Impossible's also got a movie coming out soon. How am I can't, and I know that we're all supposed to be able to separate, you know, the performer from the performance, but every once in a while you're like, look, the guy's done five of these fucking things beforehand, and it's been the only thing he's been doing for a while. Like, why should I suddenly be okay with now he's in The Mummy? Like, what the fuck is this? Like, are you guys serious? All right. I mean, and Russell Crowe. Okay, yeah, try some shit. Let's see. See if it works.
It worked.
And I think also everybody's trying to, you know, everybody wishes they were Marvel Studios right now. Everyone's like, damn it. You know, all the comic book geeks out there knew that this would work and have just been waiting for it to happen. And we're all, I think that's probably the only reason why this thing has survived through phase two this far, is because everyone's like, well, you know, we were so happy when this shit went down. Now I'm just waiting to get to Infinity War. But honestly, I would rather see a horror universe explored, you know, and mostly too, because I think The Purge, and not so much the first one, because I didn't even bother seeing it because it didn't look that interesting to me. I happened to catch Anarchy, though, like partway through. And then I watched that and I was like, oh, this fucking movie's awesome. That's a scary fucking movie, because I feel like that shit's on the verge of becoming a true story.
Right. Well, it's funny because the new Marvel film coming out with the it's not an X-Men movie, but it's like the
Next Mutants or something like that.
That actually has horror elements. It looks like they're going to do a better job at making that horror informed than the Mummy remake was making it. So yeah, there's some hope.
Now, what about shows like American Horror Story?
It's great.
Are you still watching it? Have you been watching it since the beginning?
I've watched it since the beginning. I did find that I thought season 5 was a bit of a disappointment. It was visually lavish, but I thought it was not as
Hotel?
Well. Yes.
See, that was like my favorite season. I like Hotel and Coven. They're like the two most universally hated seasons because they're so commercial.
I think Asylum was my favorite one, but I do like the newest one that was Cult. It was very about, you know, the current state of politics in this country.
You haven't watched? You didn't watch Cult?
No.
I checked out like two episodes into Roanoke, and I haven't been back since. But I was very hardcore into it for the first five seasons. I actually, before the Hollow Nine Network was what it has become now, it was actually kind of lying fallow while I was with another group based out of Chicago, and we covered American Horror Story from the beginning, and that was one of our higher downloaded film podcasts. And I mean, I really liked the anthology thing. I liked that they were bringing that kind of a sort of storytelling model back, and I feel like around the same time True Detective was hitting HBO, and that was going to be like the same type of, you know, every season is a different cast of characters and a different storyline. Maybe we'll see some of the same actors. And I really, I liked that they were hitting so many tropes in the beginning, but around Hotel, you sort of start going, well, what the fuck else are they going to do? And yeah. I don't know. Roanoke just didn't do it for me for whatever reason.
Yeah, I did like Roanoke better as it went on. And there's like a key plot twist that I totally saw coming around episode 6 or 7 of that. And then there's another major plot twist in the second, or the final third of that. But, I won't spoil it. I was pleased that
that's nice of you.
At first, it seemed like kind of a bland season, though. But that twist for me helped it a lot. It's still not my favorite season, but it was okay.
You know, it's funny. It's so fun doing a podcast with Erica. Erica actually is a forensic scientist. So you went to
I have a master's degree in forensic science. My major was technically behavioral science, and the guy who advised that track was actually an FBI trained criminal profiler.
Oh wow!
And you know, prior to that, as an undergraduate, I had had a lot of psychology coursework, even though that wasn't my major. But I just took a bunch of those courses as electives because I found them addictive.
Yeah, and I love it because if you read, Erica does most of the writing on myhorrificlife.com, the blog, and she really brings like a forensic, you know, feel to it, you know, looks at it, even when you're not meaning to, it always kind of permeates that. And I'm just, you know, I'm a clinical psychologist, and so I did – my emphasis in graduate school was law psychology, but it wasn't really that forensic profile. And it was like stuff like not guilty of a reason of insanity or guilty, you know, but mentally ill and that kind of thing. So it's a nice kind of different perspective on some of these things. Cause it's not that you bring a criminal like element and not personal criminal element. I didn't mean that, but you always kind of bring kind of that forensic aspect into kind of the podcasts and the writing too.
I think some of the criminal profiling classes warped my brain. There are certain psychologists or psychoanalysts that have really influenced me and kind of influenced the way that I look at certain films. Like Eric Fromm is a big one, who wrote Anatomy of Human Destructiveness. And in fact, since we were talking about Hostel earlier, there is he talks about the concept of elite hunting. As opposed to, hunter-gatherer societies where people hunt for their sustenance and for, animal skins to keep warm. So it's a survival thing. Whereas elite hunting, it's the stupid trophy-taking behavior that even Eric Fromm linked it to sadistic personalities.
I'm sure somewhere deep down there's some kind of a sexual dominance thing going on there too. You're like, you're literally fucking the world around you to death. Like, I'm taking your goddamn head and hanging it on my fucking wall so that I can look at it and masturbate later. I mean, that's kind of in my mind a lot of the way our more basic disgusting crazy things happen is just because, like, yep, you like weird sex, somehow there's some shit went haywire with you, and or you saw something that left you changed and whatever. You know, we all follow our own paths. We all have the things that define us, that make us who we are, and I guess responding to those is kind of what solidifies that. Definitely not where I thought we were going to be going tonight on the show, by the way. So sorry to make it so much more like, all right, guys, let's really get into the nitty gritty of what you do.
I ask about motivations for Erica, and one thing I always like that she brings up too is just, you know, there were misogynistic, you know, anti-feminist elements to a lot of the shows that we watched that I wasn't aware of. And so, you know, it's like, wow, you learn about, oh yeah, this is truly objectifying women and, you know, making them objects or even, you know, objects of hate and that kind of thing, where I previously just wasn't aware of it, or it was kind of neutral to me, which it wasn't neutral at all. So really, and also, but you've also, I can't remember when, but you've talked about situations where something that I thought of as very anti-women, and it's like, well, you didn't think it was true. It wasn't necessarily anti-women, but the protagonist was more powerful and female than we had been thinking of. I can't remember examples.
Yeah, I know there's probably more than one instance of that, but it wasn't Spit on Your Grave or one of those.
It started with I Spit on Your Grave.
I know because, we talked about that initially.
I know that is like people say, oh, that's so terrible because she's raped, but you know, she's a very powerful protagonist in it, and she, you know, I know it's a revenge film, and that's the point, but you know, she doesn't shy away, and she gets revenge. You know, not promoting killing your.
But I will promote it.
No, Eric.
I mean that was a very brutal scene. That scene was. Yeah. I remember renting that with a crowd that was not ready for that kind of shit, and I wasn't either. It was the first time I was watching it. I was just like, well, damn. Everyone's going to really have a different opinion on when Dave says, hey, let's all go watch a movie. So, you know, I guess these days these days you would definitely have to throw a trigger warning out there. Otherwise, people are going to unfriend you to your fucking face. So, you know, got to be careful. Well, I hate to do it because this is like so much fun, but I think we got to start wrapping up here.
Sure.
So I guess one of the things I'll ask is like sort of a last question, and then we can maybe leave the door open for you guys to come back and hang out again sometime, because this has been a blast. When you think of all the things that have come out in sort of the recent spate of horror films, is there anything that you see that's a trend that you're like super not excited about that you're hoping either changes directions or kind of fades away? I know we were talking about found footage earlier. It seems like when I bring that up to people, a lot of people are like, Jesus, we're done with that. Please, no more Paranormal Activities. But, you know, is there anything that you guys are kind of like, all right, let's move on. We're kind of done with that.
You know, I don't feel upset with any particular trend. And I think found footage is fine if it's done well, kind of like any other technique. There are examples that suck and there are examples that are really brilliant. So I don't think there's anything I actually hate in terms of current trends.
You know, there's a trend that did end that I'm kind of glad ended. And there was a while where you had the parody of the scary movie. It was called Scary Movie.
Yeah.
It was funny at first. The second one was kind of funny, and then it wasn't funny. So that's a trend that I'm kind of glad ended.
Over? Because I think they've made 6 of them.
I said, yeah, it went deep. It went pretty far.
Yeah, but I think I haven't heard of a 7th. So, you know, that, you know, but I'm kind of with Erica. I actually don't mind. I love the trend of having really quality kid stars.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's like Stranger Things and It.
Yeah.
And as long as the actors are good, you can't have enough of that. And I love the Insidious. So I really can't think of, I mean, just beyond just crappy movies that don't need to be made, but that will forever happen.
It will.
I can't think of any trends that I just hate right now.
Well, that's good. I mean, I know there are some people who are railing against all these sort of the remakes, and especially where there's this new Halloween remake that's just like, and we're arbitrarily just deciding these movies didn't happen. I
Rob Zombie ones. I'm just going to say, and I'm in the minority. I loved Rob Zombie's Halloween 2, and I'm super in the minority for liking that one. It seems to be almost hated.
Wow.
I thought it was pretty good and did something creative with the series that had not been done before.
Well, since you mentioned, I'm not a fan of remakes in general, but I wouldn't lay that at the feet of horror. I mean, it's just
it's kind of an
epidemic everywhere. Yeah. And so if you're, you know, do you really, I all the Spider-Man remakes.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. They were, you know,
and that's like totally a victim of, the studio is going to lose the rights to the property if they don't make a film this year. So let's make another origin story of the same thing. And I feel like that was a trend in horror for a while too. I mean, how many Exorcist, Exorcist Beyond, Exorcist The Origin, and you're like, okay, how, like, guys, find a new fucking path. All right. Like, let's do something different. But, you know, I mean, I think the way that they're doing a lot of sequels and prequels and linking things now is kind of neat. I kind of also like things like Get Out, I think, was a pretty interesting film. I kind of like that we're kind of going to start dabbling into new. That's a psychological one that you guys could probably have a fucking field day on if you haven't already. So I'm sure. Why don't we tell everybody before we start before we actually do wrap out here where they can find you guys again and what they can find when they go there?
Okay, so our website is myhorrificlife.com, and our podcast is also called My Horrific Life. We have a combination of movie reviews, occasional book reviews, celebrity interviews on the podcast. And speaking of that, I also want to give a shout out to my friend Andrew Kinoff, who is starting.
I was supposed to do that impersonation of him.
Well, and we are also on iTunes, so My Horrific Life on iTunes. You can find us there. But, yeah, Andrew Devoff.
Yeah, he's starting a brewery, and he's actually created a couple of different craft beers already and poured them for different charity events. But you can find out more about that business at 3marmbrewing.com, and it's Marm, M-A-R-M, which is logging jargon for the part of a tree where the trunk branches into two or more sub-trunks, I guess you could say. So he used to be a logger for a little while.
And now you have to do a little of your imitation, right?
Yeah,
now.
I know, right? I was like, oh man, I totally even forgot I was going to do that. But I mean, the standout moment for me, for Andrew when he was on Lost, was when, you know, I guess Kate and Saeed meet him when he's playing Mikhail, and they're right. Kind of keeping up the pretense, and then all of a sudden they play their hand, they say something that tips him off, and he puts down, I guess, the screwdriver or whatever he was, you know, using, whatever he was doing. I think, oh, he was stitching up Kate's arm, and he goes, "Why do we continue to play this little game when we all know it has moved to the next stage?" And then he just starts kicking the shit out of Saeed. And I was like, I am going to fucking say that to people.
Yes. Oh, that's great.
A good one.
That is good. You got to keep that on the podcast.
Oh God. Oh, of course, dude, that's staying in, of course. And I mean, and who doesn't remember him from Toy Soldiers? That was the first, for me anyway, the first introduction to him as a Hollywood villain. So that was pretty cool. Tell him we said hi from the Hollow Knight Network. Absolutely.
I will. Absolutely. Yeah, it's such an honor to work with him on that project. And I'm handling a lot of 3Marm's website design and social media admining and other things as they need them. So I'm really thrilled to be working with him on this.
And I like beer.
Yeah.
Who doesn't? Who doesn't? If you don't, there's something wrong with you. So we'll delve into that next time we have our friends from the world of psychology on. But you know, check out the 3Marm, and I'm sure they could find that. Are there links to it on My Horrific Life? I'm sure you guys have some coverage going on over there, or
some coverage of them.
Yeah, so. we'll throw it up there just in case there isn't.
So. Sorry, guys. I mean to throw you on the spot. I just figured that's the easiest way for everyone who's listening to this right now to be like, oh, yeah, and we'll put some links in the show notes as well. Well, thank you, guys. This has been awesome. I can't wait to do this again sometime. Everyone check out myhorrificlife.com and keep your ears here, because we're going to keep running around the world of horror and running into new friends all the time at different places, conventions, and, hey, just on things like Facebook. It's still got some use out there, so everyone can chill on the fake news and just keep making new friends. Okay, until next time, stay scared, and I hopefully Liz won't be mad at me for taking over her show too much. All right, guys, take care.
You too.
Thank you.
Bye.
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 You've been listening to the Hollow Nine Network, bringing you the very best in fan-made media. That's the word hollow, the number 9, INE. Now broadcasting from our new home on the web, hollow9.com, where you can find info on all of our awesome programming as well as the team behind the shows. Leave us your feedback, join in the conversation, and be a part of the action. Find the Hollow Nine Network on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. Rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you find your podcasts. Email us at info@hollow9.com or at hollow9podcast@gmail.com. Join in the fun. Hollow Nine.
Gas gun.
Welcome to Hollow Nine's 10 Minutes in Purgatory podcast, in which we recap and review each episode of sci-fi's hit TV series, Wynonna Earp. I am Jennifer Ooh. Nine, and with me is my co-host and resident Hollow Nine Earp expert, Jennifer Earp.
Hey there, Earpers. This is Jennifer Earp.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the main event. It's the clash of the Lady Titans beneath the neon lights, happening before your eyes and ears right here tonight. Put your hands together for the Hollow Nine Network's Glow Podcast. And now, your hosts, Jennifer Nye, Whitney Benson, and Liz Joplin.
USA Networks, Damnation. Hollow Nine Network is proud to present The Damned Flock, a Damnation podcast.
I bid you hear my words, for there are devils among us. Those who would conspire and plot against you, against me, against the very fiber that holds together to make this country strong. We have been prepared for these biblical times. This is a country at war, and we have been divinely armed. You see, brothers and sisters, we were given not a word, but a sword. The time has come for the sheep to rise against the wolves. The time has come to break their fucking backs. So you must choose a side now. Are you with the flock? Or the strike breakers.
Bring their fucking backs!
The Damned Flock. Join us.